good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, October the 11th, 2016. 1:13 coming up on 1:14 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm Scott Spears along with you on the Now program. And again, reminding you, today is the last day to get out and register to vote if you have not done it. So you can vote in the November 8th presidential election. So you will certainly want to take advantage of that. Did want to let you know, coming up at 1:45 today, we're going to be joined by Arlie Russell Hochschild, who's a New York Times best-selling author who wrote Strangers in Their Own Land, and she's going to explain to us what happened with the Republican Party and who the voters are who are voting for Trump. And it's an interesting story. She is from Berkeley, California, very liberal professor, and she went out and spent, I believe, a year it was, in a rural area, mostly Republican area of Louisiana, I believe. But she'll fill us in on that. An interesting story coming up at 1:45, and we're also going to have open phone line talk this hour, which you won't want to miss. But first, we're going to spend 10 minutes with a lady. I was very honored to be able to do this yesterday. Ann Holton, who is the wife of vice presidential candidate Tim Kaine, Hillary Clinton's vice presidential candidate, came through Marion yesterday. And we were lucky enough to be able to sit down in person with her and conduct an interview while she was in Marion. And I believe we were the only media outlet there. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate her giving a few minutes of her time. But we haven't heard a whole lot from her this campaign, so here you go. This is Ann Holton in Marion yesterday with me. Hope you enjoy. Here we go.
Spears with WWGH Radio, and we are here because it's time to get out the vote for the big November election coming up November the 8th presidential election, and we are so glad that this person stopped in Marion today. She is the Honorable Ann Holton, the wife of possibly the next Vice President of the United States, Tim Kaine. Ann, thank you so much for being with us today.
Scott, it's a pleasure. Thanks. It's my first time in Marion, and great to be here.
President Warren G. Harding's home.
I know, that's great.
Absolutely. What is it like to be out on the campaign trail?
Well, Scott, it's been fun. You know, I'm pretty well known in Virginia, and I know my Virginia folks pretty well. But it's been part of the treat of this has been getting to travel around the country and get to know the other 49 states and have folks get to know me and Tim.
What is it like being in the Midwest? The Midwest has a little different feel than other places.
Yeah, it does. You know, my husband is from Kansas City and is Midwest through and through in his spirit, even though I won the negotiation when we left law school together, and we've been in Virginia, my hometown, my home state, for 32 years since. So I do have some sense of it. And it, you know, the Midwest, nice. It's real. It's very, very real. I think people are very civil and kind and just warm and welcoming, and it's been a treat.
Why is it important for people to get out and vote? We all know it is, but what are the reasons you give for getting out and voting this year?
You know, there are just some stark differences in this campaign, and I'm supporting a candidate, Hillary Clinton, who really is laser-like focused on what we can do to help make an economy that works for everybody, not just those at the top, and has put forward concrete proposals, things like raising the minimum wage, things like having family and sick leave policies that are ours are some of the worst among the industrialized world, and it's just criminal that somebody whose kid gets sick and misses a couple of days of work might end up losing pay and then not paying the rent and getting evicted. I was a legal aid lawyer and saw that happen to people with some frequency. So I've got a candidate who's got real proposals to help bring us together, to keep us safer in the world. And when we have such stark differences, voting really matters.
When you're in a swing state like Ohio that people say a Republican candidate must win to win the presidency, when you're talking to Ohio voters, what would you say? What would you say this is the most important reason you should vote for Secretary Hillary Clinton?
Well, I do think having a candidate who knows what she's doing, who's got the judgment and the integrity, and is one of the most trustworthy people I know, Scott, and I have gotten to know her up close and personal. I've watched what a great listener she is. She will have to deal with challenges that we don't even know what they are yet, and she's got the right temperament for the job.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I love reminding Ohio voters, as you say, that you all are an extremely important state here, that participation is so important everywhere, but here it's even more important, that if you vote, it's like voting 20 times over, because your votes here are so crucial to this election.
We hear so much about Republican, Democrat, Republicans, some Republicans in your family, I believe your father. Does any of that mean anything to you when you go out and vote?
Well, you know, yes, my dad was a Republican governor of Virginia. My husband, obviously, a Democratic governor of Virginia. So I'm kind of I'm a bipartisan product for sure. I do think that, you know, back in the olden days, the parties meant two different approaches to solutions, and you could hear them and decide which one made the most sense. It's gotten so divisive in so many ways that we've almost moved to a different place now. But I will say that both Hillary and Tim, like my dad, understand what it means to reach across and work with people from other backgrounds. You know, Tim in the Senate works with his Republican colleagues all the time and has great relationships with Republican leadership and rank and file. And frankly, he hears from folks in the Senate hallways all the time, including people on the other side. We remember Hillary when she was here at the Senate. We worked with her when she was a Secretary of State as well. We can work with Hillary. I'm optimistic that we can reach across some of those barriers and get things done.
Your father being a Republican, what would he think of the Republican presidential candidate this year?
Well, I can tell you, just turned 93, and he is very much still with us. And I can tell you that he does not recognize his party in the candidates, what we're seeing today. It's neither the substance of the policies nor the style is like he was truly the party of Lincoln. He was actually a core part of his agenda was helping make Virginia a model of race relations and helping move Virginia and the nation forward on that major challenge for all of us. He would not recognize his party in what we see today.
The debate was last night. We're taping this on Monday. What'd you think?
Well, I thought Hillary did great. I thought she was the only candidate on stage who looked like somebody who really knew what it meant to be president and to be a leader of all the people, a leader with policies and proposals and understanding of the issues that can really make a difference in people's lives.
Your husband was in a debate last week. What did you think? What's it like to watch your husband debate?
Yeah, well, it's a little crazy. You know, we were in our home state in Virginia. We were on the campus of Longwood University, one of the colleges that was under my oversight as Secretary of Education in Virginia. So it was a treat to be there. It's a community that's very special for all kinds of historical reasons. I was proud of him. It was fun to watch him, but it was a little your heart's in your throat because you want him to do well. It's so important. I thought he did great. He got a little feisty. He got his Irish up. I like to say that he feels so passionately about these issues and the stark differences, and I think that passion came through.
Tell me about when your husband said, you know, I think this is vice president. This is going to be something I'm going to be doing.
Yeah, well, I would say it was more of an evolution that we, you know, he was vetted for vice president slot back in 2008 by then Senator Obama, and we didn't think it would come to anything then, and we were happy it didn't come to anything then. We really thought that Vice President Biden was absolutely the right choice that time. This time, we sort of knew with increasing, we had increasing awareness throughout the spring and summer that he was being seriously considered. And so we had lots of family discussions about it. And, you know, if we are asked to serve in this way, can we make it work? And it is a little scary worrying about the lack of privacy and implications for family, for our, really not just our immediate family, but our whole extended family. Everybody's lives gets turned a little bit topsy-turvy. But we just feel we've both had lives in public service, and We felt like if this was an opportunity to be part of making history, we were so proud to have been early strong supporters of President Obama's and huge fans of Hillary's. And if this was a chance to help her win and to help her govern, then we were all in.
History is the word. Your father was a governor. Your husband was a governor. This could be the first female president ever. As a woman who has ambition, strong woman, just the thought of that. A first female president.
Yeah, it is. It's just emotional. You know, she is so qualified in so many ways. It feels like the race should be 90-10. And I know there's folks with all kinds of different views, but when I think about how close it is, my best way of understanding that is that we are making history, and that's just always hard. But it makes it all the more important, too, that we break this glass ceiling. And we do realize some of the recent unpleasantness, shall we say, has reminded us that we can't take for granted necessarily that women are treated equally and fairly in our society yet. We've made huge progress, but we cannot take these things for granted. We can't write to participate. We can't take our right to our own reproductive freedom. We can't take anything for granted. And to have a woman leader at this crucial time in our history, it just makes me very, very proud.
Final question. You said it should be 90-10. You feel it should be 90-10. Why isn't it 90-10?
Well, I started to say my husband is my best political advisor, and he predicted a year or more ago that it was going to be close. And that is because it is hard to make history. That no matter what else is going on, when you are doing something new and challenging, and you know, it took us 140 some years to give women the right to vote in this country. We set out that equality principle back in 1776, but we've been imperfectly moving toward it all this time. It took us 140 years, and now another 96 years before a woman on a major party ticket. It making history is never easy, and I think that has a lot to do with it.
The Honorable Ann Holton, it's been my honor. Thank you.
Scott, great to be with you.
Ann Holton was here in Marion yesterday, and that was the interview. She is the wife of Tim Kaine, who is Hillary Clinton's vice presidential candidate. Think about this. In 29 days, the woman who was in Marion yesterday, who we got to sit down with, who you just heard, could be the wife of the vice president. How about that? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Do you have any comments on the U Downs interview that we were able to finish up earlier on? Are any comments on the historic Ann Holton interview? I don't believe, and if somebody's out there who wants to correct me, please feel free. I don't believe that anybody from Marion has ever sat down while still in Marion with a person to do an interview face-to-face who is could possibly be the wife of the vice president in 30 days. Maybe an historic interview. What'd you make of her? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Any thoughts on the U Downs interview or Ann Holton, which we just heard, or anything else going on in the world? The Mary Ellen Withrow interview yesterday, or anybody else we had on yesterday? Eleanor Cliff, Larry Merchant, The Dispatch, the Alan Miller, the editor of the Columbus Dispatch. A lot of interesting guests so far this week. And again, coming up in the last 15 minutes, so we want you to call in now because we only have about 18 minutes to talk on the phone, will be Arlie Russell Hochschild, who has written Strangers in Their Own Land, which is talking about the American right, the Republican right, and why they vote the way they do, and has there been a change over the years? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Now, we know a lot of people don't seem to care about endorsements or anything going on like that, but a Republican president endorsing a Democrat is something. Newspapers, after 100 years, switching their endorsements is something. But now this may be the most shocking change of them all. Glenn Beck, conservative talk show host, released this statement today. Noted conservative pundit Glenn Beck thinks Donald Trump has gone too far and has officially decided to endorse Hillary Clinton for president, to the shock of many. It's not acceptable to ask a moral, dignified man to cast his vote to help elect an immoral man who is absent dependency or absent decency or dignity, Beck wrote in a Facebook post Saturday. If the consequence of standing against Trump and for principles is indeed the election of Hillary Clinton, so be it. At least it is a moral, ethical choice. Now, this is Glenn Beck. This is the man from Fox News. This is the conservative radio host. Some people said he was to the right of Rush Limbaugh, but he has now called, as of Saturday, for the endorsement of Hillary Clinton. He does not endorse Donald Trump, and I want to read that line he said again. It is not acceptable to ask a moral, dignified man to cast his vote to help elect an immoral man who is absent decency or dignity. Now, here becomes the point. Is Donald Trump an indignant person? Because we've heard the Hillary Clinton knocks over and over and over. We've heard the emails. We've heard about the Benghazi. We've heard about Whitewater. We've heard about Bill Clinton's affairs. We've heard about all that stuff. But when it comes right down to it, is Donald Trump a dignified man? Is he a role model? Should his picture be hanging in every school in this country, being president of the United States? Because maybe that's the quandary we keep having when we go back and forth here on the station. Is this man presidential material? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Please give us a call. We would certainly love to hear from you on this matter, because it is an important matter, and we are under 30 days away from the big election that's going to do this, and Supreme Court justices and the next president of the United States. It's a big deal, and you really have to think it over. Now, we can go back to Friday's video, and yesterday we talked a little bit about it, but the things that Donald Trump talked about in that video are not locker room talk. Now, am I saying those things have never been said anywhere? Well, of course they've been said anywhere. He didn't invent the words. But I don't say those things. I can say that those things haven't been said in this radio station when we're off the air and kidding around with each other and having private conversations. I can't say that I've ever had those type of private conversations with people on the phone or in a locker room. I don't know where that happens. Now, it is true that I have worked places with people who were probably between the age of 16 and 25 who said things in that vein, but they are exactly that. They are people 16 to 25 years of age, and they are working probably in most cases their first job. And it's not even a serious job. It's a, for them, mostly just part-time jobs, your first job. But they're not running for president. They're not 59 years old when they make the statement. They're not supposed to be this great businessman. I don't know many 59-year-old men talking in locker rooms like that. And maybe that's the point. Maybe that's the difference. I don't know that 60-year-old men with upstanding dignity are doing that. Because what he said was he grabbed women's parts, the term that's known as groping. He said they will let you do anything. And he even goes further in that video to say that he can't help himself from kissing people. Now, Bill Cosby has been in the news the last couple years for drugging and raping people, charges that have not yet been proven out. But we'll see what goes on there. But again, it certainly has cost Bill Cosby his life, and he wasn't running for president. His shows are no longer on the air. I certainly don't think people revere him in the way they do. He no longer does stand-up concerts. His career is pretty well over. And now he'll stand trial for this. What's the difference? And isn't there a bigger difference when the person is running for president? This is not politics. This is not policy. This is not how are you going to jumpstart the economy. This is not how are you going to fix illegal immigration. This is not how are you going to do any of these things. It's a insight into somebody's character when they didn't think the microphone was over. And his own wife demeaned him, said she found it unacceptable. So I don't know. It's very, very strange. Not to mention the fact that, if nothing else, he was married at the time that he was making these comments, and mentions in the video that the woman, Nancy O'Dell of Entertainment Tonight, that he was making the move on at the time, was married, and he knew it. So is this really the man to be criticizing Bill Clinton? Because if Bill Clinton had affairs, which we know he did certainly do that, Donald Trump was certainly trying, and maybe he did. We don't know. Did he? Didn't he? I'm pretty sure he did on his first wife, Ivanka, with Marla Maples. And then to hear the videos from Howard Stern of him talking about his daughter in a certain way, does that go on in locker rooms too? Do people talk about their daughters like that? Is that the role model for the country? And the president, like it or not, is a role model. You can say things about George W. Bush and Barack Obama and George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan and the whole bunch. You can say what you want about those people policy-wise and mistakes maybe they should not have done within the government. But I don't know that they were immoral characters. I don't know that them hanging in office buildings and being in history books and hanging in schools was a bad thing. The issue with Bill Clinton was moral character. And we spent 2 years in this country covering his moral character. We impeached him. And he lives with that to this day. I still hear Monica Lewinsky jokes to this day. That has been 18 years ago, and they're still flying around. And obviously these women who showed up on Sunday night are still very angry. And if it is the truth that he did what he did, they should be angry. But that has nothing to do with Hillary Clinton. I've never heard Hillary Clinton say she had an affair. I've never seen that played out. I've never seen Hillary Clinton say something in that vein. Just strictly morals. Forget Democrat, forget Republican, forget policy, just morals. And you may not like Hillary, and I would never say vote for somebody you don't like, but we're getting down to the point where these are the two. Now, yes, you can vote for Gary Johnson. Yes, you can vote for Jill Stein. They are still there. But you're going to get Trump or Hillary. And in the back of your mind, you know that. And to continue to say that this is the lesser of two evils, I think I'm going to start having to agree with you, Downs, to a certain extent. There's something wrong with that statement. Because Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are not of the same moral fiber. They both have problems with policy. Hillary Clinton had the email scandal. Yes, she had the Benghazi scandal. Even though she's been cleared, we still love to talk about it. Donald Trump had his issue with Cuba. Donald Trump had his issue with the Attorney General in Florida. Donald Trump had the issue with his foundation. The Clintons have had the issue with their foundation. Absolutely. But that's not what we're talking about today. And that's not what we're talking about as of Friday. And maybe it shouldn't have been a shock to all these people. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Condoleezza Rice, John McCain, Paul Ryan, who have basically all left out him out there to turn in the wind, Glenn Beck. Maybe it shouldn't have been a shock, because he has been saying things that are provocative and not to be said in polite company. But I guess he gets a pass. Give us a call. We've still got to 7 minutes here, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. I would really like to hear the explanation of how Donald Trump is a man of high moral character who should be the role model of this country. Because even his own party doesn't seem to feel that way anymore. I would love to hear that explanation. And I don't want to hear Hillary Clinton in the answer. I want to know why Donald Trump is the guy. Why Donald Trump is great. Why Donald Trump is the man that's going to make America great again. Or what do you think of the debate on Sunday night? What did you think of what you Downs had to say? What do you think of anything we've said on this program? Ann Holton, what did you think of that interview? Give us a call, 740-383-9944. We've still got time. I think everybody's gotten shy today. 740-383-9944. Give us a ring and we will put you up on the air. It's interesting because it is differing opinions. And certainly what I'm saying right now is not even an opinion. I'm just trying to lay out here some facts, and I want somebody to call in and say something different. I want you to tell me what is wrong with the facts that I have laid out here. Where's the problem? We want to know. Hillary Clinton at this point is 11 points ahead. The poll that was taken after the whole issue with the Access Hollywood video, she's ahead 11 points nationally, and I believe still leads in every swing state out there. Why is that? Did you like Ann Holton as a vice presidential candidate? Do you trust her judgment in that she said she's gotten to know Hillary? She feels Hillary is very trustworthy. What do you think? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give us a ring. We would love to put you up on the air. And again, don't forget, the Marion, Ohio League of Women Voters Candidates Night will be broadcast live and exclusively on WWGH Radio on Thursday, October the 20th, starting at 7:30 p.m. You can listen live over the air at 107.1 FM, on the internet at WWGH1071.com, or by downloading the free TuneIn app on any mobile device and searching WWGH Radio. The event itself will take place at the Marion Senior Center, located at 2375 Harding Highway East here in Marion. The doors open at 7 p.m. and the radio broadcast will begin at 7:30. You won't want to miss that. So radio broadcast 7:30 right here on WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, the only place to hear it. And but if you want to see it live, the doors open at 7 at the Senior Center, 2375 Harding Highway East. Well, no calls today, so we are going to take a quick break here and come back with Arlie Russell Hochschild. Well, we're going to ask her how to say her last name. That's going to be the first question. Strangers in Their Own Land is the book. It's going to be very interesting to talk about the voters out there today for Donald Trump. Stay tuned. We're coming right back after this. Don't you dare even think about changing that dial.
Hi, this is Steve Boom Boom Cannon. And as the king of trivia, I've got a question for you. Where can you find great talk, open phone lines, and celebrities every day? Now with Scott Spears on WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM LP. We're in Marion, Ohio. Call him at 740-383-9944. Streaming live on the internet at www.WWGH1071.com.
From 12:10 to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Hello, this is Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and you know, Charlie Evers is a Marion radio legend. and you can catch him right here on WWGH 107.1 FM and streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com. Charlie also takes your calls on anything under the sun by calling this number, 740-383-9944. Speedy delivery.
The Fahey Bank Charlie Evers Show every Wednesday and Thursday, 10:10 a.m. till 12 noon, and Friday, 1:10 p.m. till 3 p.m. on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Hey, Scott Spears back with you here, 43 minutes past the hour, and we're going to delve into a very interesting book I had the opportunity to get a hold of, Strangers in Their Own Land, Anger and Mourning on the American Right, A Journey to the Heart of Our Political Divide, and certainly with the debate we had Sunday being called the most contentious in political history, and a candidate like Donald Trump, this might give us some insight into a very interesting book and a very interesting person, the author of this book, Arlie Hochschild. Arlie, how are you?
Well, good. Delighted to be with you, Scott.
Arlie, I think the story behind this book is very interesting. How did it happen and exactly what happened?
5 years ago, I began to already feel, as a lot of people did, that the nation was splitting left and right, each side getting hardened. They're getting to insult each other. Congress was at a standstill, And so I realized that here in Berkeley, California, I was in a political enclave, and that actually all Americans are in some form of political enclave. So when I talk to, you know, my friends and neighbors, they all agreed with me. But when I open the newspaper and turn on the television, I said, wow, there's a huge split. So I decided to get out of my enclave and go as far as I could to an enclave as different from mine as could be. And because the split was caused not by, because the left was getting more left, but the right was getting more right, I wanted to go where the right was growing the fastest. That was the South among whites, and Louisiana was the super South. So I thought, perfect, that's where I'll go. And I have written my book about the people I got to know and appreciate and respect, but who lived in a completely different political truth.
You know, the stories in here are so interesting. Do you have a favorite? And if you do, could you tell us your favorite?
Yes, I think my favorite would be Mike Schaff. I begin the book with describing him driving me through a sugarcane field, because he was born on a sugar plantation in a small, what he calls a shotgun house. You could shoot right through it. He was the fifth of seven children of a Cajun family. His father was a plumber. And then he spent his adult life working for oil, you know, and helping to dig the rigs out in the Gulf of Mexico. So, and now he is a member of the Tea Party who plans to vote for Donald Trump. And so I followed him in what was a journey for him. While he was always right-wing, he had always appreciated nature, but had never been an environmentalist, because that was what liberals did. That was part of their agenda. And he, when I first met him, said, the government is taking community away. I value community. The government's the problem. And just need to reduce it, stop paying taxes. And what happened to him is that he did lose his community, not because the government took it away, but because Texas Brine, a drilling company, drilled a hole in the bayou he lived by, and thereby wrecking the whole place, so that methane gas began to rise up. There were new earthquakes. There had never been there before. And the land began to tilt. It was really a horrific, extraordinary industrial accident, caused the evacuation of all 360 people in this community. And I asked him, look, you've lost your community, you've had to move, you're no longer near your neighbors, but it wasn't the government that took it away. It was this company, Texas Brine, that did that. He said, yes, you know, that's true. But still, the government was, you know, was the enemy number one, and that was because Trump was an outsider to this government. That was the big plus for Trump.
You know,
but I think actually, in conversations with this man, and I'm not sure he still is Trump, but I haven't, you know, contacted him about his response to the latest news, but I still found a lot of crossover issues, and I understand in part what he was mad at. In other words, in Louisiana, what you have is an oil state, and the oil companies control the state government. And in fact, they make the state do the moral dirty work for them. And to, in fact, pretend to regulate polluting industries, but not really to regulate them, not really to protect the people. So people feel mad at the state for doing a bad job. But in fact, it is just doing a bad job. It's doing the company's job for it. So it isn't crazy that this guy is critical of the state, but he sees this in a more partial way.
You know, Arlie, two things that come to my mind immediately after hearing that story. In hour number one today, we had Hugh Downs on, former Today Show and 2020 anchor, and we were recapping the debate. And I said, how does something like he's interviewed presidents back to Eisenhower and Truman.
Right.
And I said, how does Donald Trump happen? Because he's definitely not a supporter of Trump. And his answer seems to be that there is an angry, and he calls it, group of people in the wilderness that have not educated themselves. Is there something to that?
Angry people in the wilderness who have not educated themselves. Well, the people I came to know for strangers in their own land would be offended at that, because many of them are college educated and up on things, and they wouldn't feel understood by that. I think what they are angry. They do feel in a wilderness. They feel put down by progressives and liberals and Democrats. They feel like they're seen as, backward Southerners that are ill-educated and prejudiced. So they smart under that, those put-downs. But they see the federal government first as an instrument of the North upon them, and always wagging its moral finger. They see the federal government this is a paradox, because this one progressives could agree with, as an instrument of industry, as an instrument, in their case, in Louisiana, of oil, that the state is doing the bidding of oil companies, and so it's not really protecting you. And then they also see the state as the instrument of what I call the line cutters. And here is how I might differ from Hugh Downs. I am looking in this book at the emotional basis of politics, which I see as centered in a deep story And I think the left has its deep story and the right has its deep story. And a deep story, what is a deep story? It's you take it's life as it really feels. So you take moral judgments out, you take facts out. It's just the feel. It's just a story of life as it really feels. And I would describe it as you're waiting in line for the American dream, as in a pilgrimage up a line. And you've been waiting a long time, and the line isn't moving, and then you see some line cutters. Oh, well, who are they? What? It's unfair. They're cutting ahead. And they would be affirmative action blacks that now have access to jobs that used to be reserved for whites. Affirmative action women now have access to jobs that used to be reserved for men. Immigrants, refugees, they see these groups as sponsored by the government and as getting ahead of them for an ever more distant American dream. So they see the government as an instrument of their own marginalization. From where they sit, that's how it feels. So they feel like a minority group themselves, but too proud to claim it. And So I think it isn't just angry people in a wilderness who need an education. I think we have to understand what that marginalization feels like and speak to it. You know, open a public national conversation about that. I guess that's what I think is missing in this country. Each side is just talking to itself and getting more steamed up. And what's really missing is a national conversation that is based on what I call climbing the empathy wall, taking your alarm system off, trying to really get how it feels to the other guy, and then beginning your conversation about the remaining profound differences that we have.
What do they think Donald Trump can do to change things?
It's not that they love Donald Trump. It's that they don't see anything else for them on the political spectrum. I think that's kind of the main story that I encountered. Some people were ambivalent. They feel like they've backed into a support of him. They've never loved him. The people that I came to know in the bayous of Louisiana. And yet, some also have been extremely enthusiastic. I think they feel offered a secular rapture, if you know this belief in a moment in which the world comes to an end and you will be drawn up, the good people go to heaven and the bad to hell. And they feel, in a way, that he's offering to, as he says, be their messenger, right, and lift them up. So it's kind of a magical promise, and some people are really going for it.
You know, we sit here in Ohio every day and take phone calls from the listening audience, and we have so many people who call in who start with the premise of, we don't like Trump, and we're not going to vote for Trump. Immediately, they will also say, though, we don't trust Hillary and we don't like her. Now, we're either going to vote third party, we're going to leave it blank, we're not going to vote at all, we're going to write somebody in, whatever the answer is. But where does the anger, in your opinion, for Hillary come from this group?
That's really a wonderful question. I think she is seen as a system person, as that the person is kind of disappeared into a system, and that is a neoliberal system, that she's signed on to treaties, that she's taken money from Goldman Sachs, and she has become too much part of a system that, again, in the deep story, has, in their view, marginalized them. I think a good bit of it is that, and the rest of it may well be misogyny. But misogyny has so many different expressions, and I think it's they're looking for someone who is kind of more authentic and you know, friendly in some way, and there may be a double standard about that. They, in other words, when and also when she got sick, do you remember? And rather than being and trying to disguise that sickness as being stoical and resilient, you know, and really trying to tough it out, instead of those moral qualities being praised, she got seen as by Trump as weak, right? And she got sick, she got weak, or she was hiding something. So I'm not in, I think one expression of misogyny is that there's a double standard in how your behavior is interpreted.
It's kind of interesting. None of us have a crystal ball, and people will vote the way they vote here in 29 days. But in reality, who would help this group the most? With just the plans laid out and the idea of who they are, this group that you write about, Who would help them? Would life be better with them under one or the other?
Oh, personally, I am convinced that it would be much better under Hillary Clinton, as she is goosed and pressured by Bernie Sanders voters into reversing her position on some of those trade deals, on really cracking down on Wall Street, and really offering free community college education, and putting some of the rungs back in the letter, in the ladder, so that people in blue collar jobs, you know, or that are heading for them, can get good steady work. So, yeah, I think definitely. I think to put it the other way, that Trump, I feel personally, is a potential fascist in clown's clothing. Quite apart from his sexual predations, I think he's dangerous. I think he would try and close down the free press and get his sister in Supreme Court. He would create and exaggerate racial tensions, and I think he would be a really, truly a disaster, not only for the people I studied, for strangers in their own land, but for the whole country. You know, my husband and I were recently giving some talks in Hungary, in Budapest, and there President Orban has closed down the free press, has really closed down nonprofits, has begun to consolidate his power, and he has changed all the statues in the city of Budapest, so there are now all these heroic, romantic 19th century Hungarian heroes, and any sign of Hungary's role in helping the Jews go to their death has been erased. So it's kind of an erasure of history. It was scary. And so we asked a commentator, an observer, how could this happen in Hungary? Hungary was a free democracy. It had finally escaped the coils of the Soviet Union and wanted nothing of that. They just wanted to be free, and how could this fascist take over? And you know what the answer was? They didn't think it could happen, and the left was closed in on itself. The liberals were closed in on themselves and divided. And I came home on the plane and thought, I wonder if that's our story, too.
That being said, 29 days away, you get around quite a bit in the country. Who do you think is going to take this?
I think Hillary will. And then our job is ahead of us to push her to do the right thing. I wouldn't have said that 3 weeks ago, but I do believe it now. But it's a question of getting the votes out, because, as you know, more on the right plan to vote than on the left. There are more sort of stay-at-homers on the liberal side.
It's a very interesting book, Strangers in Their Own Land, Arlie Hochschild. Arlie, thank you so much for coming on.
That was great.
Thank you.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for the chance. Bye.
And that's all the time we have for today. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout. Stay tuned for much more programming here on WWGH Radio.
Championship featuring 565-pound Uncle Hog, Dick the Bruiser Jr.